From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a chaplain looks at life after death and near-death experiences. But here's what's happening. A report tying the Chinese military to computer attacks against American interests is sending a chilling push through cybersecurity experts who worry that the very lifelines of the United States, its energy pipelines, its water supply, its banks, are increasingly at risk. The experts say that a successful hacker attack taking out just a part of the nation's electrical grid or crippling financial institutions for even several days could have panic or even lead to loss of life. An American computer security company has reported with near certainty that members of a sophisticated Chinese hacking group work out of the headquarters of a unit of the Chinese army outside of Shanghai. Lauren Weinstein, of course, watches the internet for us. Lauren, this is an incredible story, and I understand we may take action and do the same thing.
Well, yeah, this is a story that's kind of amusing in a way, in a kind of sick way, that is. Because we know that this kind of hacking goes on. This particular story that's coming out of this particular company, and you have to realize there's a self-promotional aspect whenever a company does something like this. They're trying to be very specific. They're saying, yeah, it's the Chinese army. It's coming out of this 12-story apartment building in Shanghai, and they're showing photos of the building on the news and all of that. Well, that may be true, and it may not be true, but recall that this is all spy versus spy, right?
Yeah.
They're doing it. We're doing it. We're putting a fortune into cyber ops in this country now so that we can do the same sort of thing. And it doesn't it's not necessarily war-oriented things and infrastructure. It can be trying to get financial information and commercial information just to, on a competitive basis.
How easy is it, Lauren, to do this?
It's pretty easy depending on your target, okay? Some targets are obviously going to be hardened. What gets a lot of people really nervous, and you were talking about infrastructure before, is that the hardware that's used to interface a lot of our infrastructure to the internet, these are systems that they're generically called SCADA systems. And a lot of them just have basically no security. They were kind of slapped on the internet because it made it easier for the various companies and utilities and things to do remote monitoring. And they're just full of holes. I mean, that's the funniest thing about this. If you look at some of the examples of the Chinese hackers supposedly that are doing this, they seem to have like middle school level hacking skills. I mean, this isn't like a James Bond movie, okay?
It wouldn't surprise you, though, Lauren, if something happened, though, with our grid or something based on a hack attack.
It could certainly happen. But if you want to know where the most likely failure is going to be, it's probably going to happen because we have neglected our infrastructure so much that you're going to have massive power failures just because of failures of equipment and such. And there's one other thing to keep in mind. For all of the attention that's put on the cyber side of this and the internet side of this, and it's well-deserved, I mean, there are real vulnerabilities, a lot more damage can be done a lot more quickly by someone who goes out in the middle of the desert somewhere with some explosives and takes down a high-tension tower. Because our infrastructure, especially our electrical infrastructure, is so under-resourced and so vulnerable that if you take out the right high-power feed line, you can cause cascading blackouts and things. So while we should pay attention to all the high-tech sides of this, we also really have to be paying attention to the low-tech sides as well.
You know, that's a good point. Lauren Weinstein, outgoing Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, warned just a few months ago that the United States was facing a threat that amounted to a cyber Pearl Harbor, and he raised the specter of intentionally derailed trains, contaminated water, widespread blackouts. So we will all keep our eyes on this one. Meanwhile, Apple, recently attacked by hackers who infected Macintosh computers of some of its employees. The company said this in an unprecedented disclosure describing the widest known cyber attacks targeting Apple computers used by corporations. Unknown hackers infected the computers of some Apple workers when they visited a website for software developers that had been infected with malicious software. The malware had been designed to attack the Macs. A patient infected with a new respiratory illness similar to the deadly SARS virus has died in the United Kingdom. He was being treated at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham and died on Sunday morning. Of the 12 people known to have been infected with the virus around the world, 50% of them have died. Now, the threat to the general population, you, thought to be small, although the virus has shown signs of spreading in people. In Oklahoma, authorities say a man who died in a fire at his home may have died spontaneously of spontaneous combustion. The sheriff identified the man as a 66-year-old. The sheriff said several neighbors entered the home when they saw smoke, assumed trash had caught fire. They realized the person was burning. The sheriff said the remains were in the kitchen, no other damage in the home. The sheriff says there was no apparent source of the fire. He said he's never seen anything like it in his career. Now, the man did have a history of heavy drinking and smoking. No cause of the fire yet, but the sheriff says spontaneous combustion has not been ruled out. In a moment, an expert on human spontaneous combustion, Larry Arnold, joins us for the hour. We'll talk about this story. In our highlights reel at coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the bird invasion. It's a real-life horror to a Kentucky city. Millions of birds have descended on a small Kentucky city, fouling the landscape, scaring pets, raising the risk for disease, and a real-life version of Alfred Hitchcock's horror film, The Birds. Go take a look at that story. It's in Hopkinsville, and we get a lot of calls from people in that area. Well, the Dow Jones Industrial, it is now flirting with the highest level it's been, and that was hit on October of 2007. It's on a roll. Registered investment advisor Mish Shedlock with us. Mish, why is it on a roll?
You got me, George. I really don't get it. It's just a sentiment thing, and we've talked about it before. But the real economy and the stock market are two different things. And I just commented on my blog, actually earlier today, about an interesting thing that happened at Walmart. The Jerry Murray, that's the Vice President of Finance and Logistics, said in an internal email that Bloomberg got a hold of, said, this is the worst start to a month in sales that he's seen in 7 years in the company.
Interesting. Interesting. And we don't hear that outside.
No, we don't. And Bloomberg got a copy of this and published the email. And then last month, a different senior vice president at Walmart said, well, we just had one of these weeks here at Walmart. Where are all the customers and where's their money? This is another internal email that got leaked to the press. And what's happening here, George, is this payroll tax is starting to hit hard. In the fourth quarter of last year, and we talked about this, it was unexpected to almost everyone, but you and I, of course, because we've been following this, that GDP actually went negative, and we're off to this kind of start here at Walmart, where this sales tax is hitting hard. This
payroll tax
increase,
yep,
is hitting hard. And we've got this sequester coming up where there's going to be some budget cuts. That's going to hit hard. I think we're in recession. If we're not, we're flirting with it. The stock market doesn't see it yet.
No, not yet. Can they rescind the payroll tax, the income tax hike?
I don't believe they're going to do that.
They're not.
Any chance of that, George. But Obama definitely is trying to get them to say, you know, let's cut back on some of these cuts. There's a chance the Republicans don't buy it. I've been very skeptical here because at the last minute, there's always this deal that's worked out. But the Republicans seem fairly firm here. They said, okay, we granted you the tax hike here. What are you going to throw in the pot? So we'll see. Congress is on recess all this week. If they work this out, it's going to be at the very last moment again, George.
That's a big if. Mish, thank you so much. Not a good week for BMW or its customers. Just days after recalling more than 30,000 of its big X5 crossovers for potential brake problems, now BMW is recalling 570,000 Model 3 Series from the year 2007 through 2011, as well as the 2008 through 2012 other series, the 1 Series coupes and convertibles, and also Z4 Roadsters. They got a mess on their hands. A battery cable connector can fail and cause engines to stall out. NASA restoring contact with the International Space Station after losing communication with the station for nearly 3 hours. For a time, NASA's ground control was only able to contact the space explorers, 2 Russians, 1 American, every 90 minutes when the station passed over Russia. Had to do with a computer glitch there. And, of course, that story we've been following for a week now, the meteor that became a meteorite that crashed to Earth in Russia, they say was about 55 feet in diameter, weighing 10,000 tons, was made from a stony material, making it the largest such object to hit the planet in more than a century. Science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland. What do you think of all this, Rich?
Well, have you seen the videos I've been sending you?
Yeah, I sure have.
What do you think?
It's strange.
Well, tell people why it's strange.
No, you tell them. That's why you're on.
I'd like you to tell me what you see in these videos.
Well, I see them splitting off, but I also see something that seems to be coming at it.
Okay.
But I don't know what it is.
What's interesting is we got a new view today from a new perspective right under the contrail. Remember, this thing came in from the east at dawn, and most of the videos we've seen have been far away, and so you're looking at it at a very long slant range.
Right.
This set of videos is right under it, and you can look directly up, particularly in the last one I sent you. They pan around for like several minutes, and you can see that it didn't split. It was a double contrail all the way coming in.
What does that mean?
Well, what I sent you was some additional material.
And we've got some links up there on our Twitter feed.
I also sent Lex some stuff. He should be posting any moment. And I'm going to have a complete analysis on Enterprise Mission in the next few days. There's a lot of work, a lot of stuff to type, so people be patient.
Remember, well, come on, though. Don't tease us. What's going on here?
If you look at wind tunnel tests with airfoils, like wings on big, heavy aircraft, or discs, like saucers, if you put them edgewise to an airstream and you put them in a smoke test where you have smoke that makes the air currents visible, you get twin counter-rotating vortices from either the wingtips or the edges of the disc.
So you're saying what a caller said on Friday when you were with us, that maybe the Russians shot down some kind of saucer.
If this thing had been a rock or a snowball round tumbling, you wouldn't get these stabilized vortices. This says to me, and any physicist looking at this, this was a stabilized artificial object coming in at over Mach 60. And in one of those videos, you can see something come up behind it, chase it, catch it, and then there looks like an explosion. This is not just a simple meteor, as we said Friday night.
Let's go take a look at it. It's on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com and also enterprisemission.com, Richard C. Hoagland's website. It is amazing. Yet scientists are continuing to say this is the biggest object to hit the planet in more than a century. Up next, we're going to talk about this incredible story. Did a human being spontaneously combust? We're going to talk with Larry Arnold, author of Ablaze. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We're talking about this incredible story in Oklahoma where a man dies, burns to death, maybe spontaneously combusted. Larry Arnold, of course, been on the program with me before. His book, Ablaze, The Mysterious Fires of Spontaneous Human Combustion. Larry, this is a bizarre story. Have you had a chance to look into it?
We actually have had a chance today, George, and it's so nice to have your voice in our ear and listening to you on the radio, by telephone tonight. We missed you guys. This case does look very, very provocative. We've had the opportunity to discuss the case, superficial details with some of the reporters that have been covering it out in the Oklahoma market, and listen to the fire marshal from Sequoia County talk about his experience and observations at the fire scene. And we also were able to make connections with Ronnie Rogers, who's the fire marshal in Fort Smith. who was also involved and has seen the photographs of the fire scene. This has all the markings, so far as we can determine at this point, of what appears to be classic spontaneous human combustion.
Now, they did say he smoked a lot. They did say he drank a lot. You've looked at some cases, Larry, where some people have indeed passed out in a sofa or a chair or a couch, and they burned to death, right?
Of course, yes.
Now, in this particular case, the sheriff says it's strange. It's weird.
He certainly called it bizarre, yes, indeed. And the reason he has done that is because, well, let's go to our interview that we conducted earlier today with the fire marshal, Ronnie Rogers, who's had 30 years' experience in the fire service field. And he said in that 3 decades, he's never seen a body burned like this body of Mr. Danny Van Zandt, nor in the conditions and are surrounding the body. And what caused him, and certainly was what caused Ron Lockhart, the sheriff for Sequoia County, to consider spontaneous human combustion, is this localized intense incineration of the victim and a lack of significant heat and flame damage to nearby surrounding combustible materials, which is the hallmark of what history has defined as the concept of spontaneous human combustion. In this case, the fire marshal told us that the body was pretty well burnt, except for the head, the hands, and the feet. Now, this is new information. We have not seen this anywhere on the Internet, so you guys are getting off here on this. The rest of the body initially was described as burnt. Well, a third-degree body burn can be, the body can be picked up, put in a body bag, taken to a morgue, fully autopsied, you know. We think the use of the word burned body in this case probably isn't fully accurate. As you said in your lead into this story, the neighbors who first discovered something amiss in the home thought a pile of trash was burning on the floor. They didn't realize it was a human body.
It was Danny.
That's that intense already. The fire marshal told us that there was a hole burned through the floor. We asked what the material on the flooring was. He told us linoleum and wood flooring that the body burned through. We do not know the nature of the subflooring or the space below the floor in the kitchen area of this home, but it sounds remarkably like what we discovered and researched in the case of Dr. Bentley from here in Pennsylvania back in 1966. That's the classic case that left behind one leg next to a 2x3-foot hole that had burned through the floor with the aluminum walker lying askew atop of the hole. And the rest of Dr. Bentley's body had basically burned to dry powder. In this case, getting back to the concept of spontaneous human combustion, which is a very high heat fire apparently, but producing very limited damage, very little beyond the body itself.
What happens to the cells, Larry, to combust like that? Something heats up the body internally. So what happens?
Certainly something does heat the body, whether it's something internal to the body or something that is not yet recognized by mainstream science that is external to the body. We're still, you know, playing around with theories in that area. What the fire marshal told us and what the sheriff told us, Sheriff Lockhart, has thought about this case, is that they know what happens to a body when somebody drops a cigarette on him or herself. And both of them have said, in their years of experience, this body of Danny Van Zandt was burned far more seriously, far more thoroughly, far more completely than they would expect that kind of an external ignition source to produce.
And merely dropping a cigarette on your pants or something, generally you're not going to, you know, go up in a blaze, are you?
Generally, that does appear to be indeed factual. Absolutely, George. Yes.
Now, what are the theories, Larry, that you've been investigating if the body doesn't heat up internally? What else could happen?
We've looked at biochemistry in the body, various endorphins, enzymes we believe can unleash a tremendous amount of heat internally and quite rapidly. We've looked at bioelectricity as a mechanism by which some of these events can occur. We've looked at sources, energies outside the body, like telluric energies, energies that run through the planet. If you're at the right place but at the wrong time, where these energies explode into our three-dimensional reality and you happen to be standing there, you may not be standing for much longer. We've applied quantum theory and quantum physics to this phenomenon and have come up with some interesting findings there. Well, we've seen posted online already about the Danny Van Zandt case in Oklahoma, as well as many other cases that history has quantified as spontaneous human combustion, is this fallback to drop cigarettes, the person was drunk, besotted, and fell asleep after an alcoholic stupor, dropping his lit cigarette on his lap.
And sure, you got to weigh some of that, but you've investigated the very strange. We're going to come back with more with you, Larry, and we're going to take some phone calls. Perhaps people can share stories. Maybe they've heard of these cases. We'll be back. Well, next hour, we'll talk with a chaplain about near-death experiences and the other side. When we come back in a moment with Larry Arnold, we'll talk more about spontaneous human combustion as well. And welcome back to Coast, Larry Arnold with us. We're going to take your calls as we talk about spontaneous human combustion. Larry, as we talk, you were right. Most people will think the person was smoking, drinking, he caught on fire, and that was it. But in the cases you've investigated, and you've looked at more than 400 of them at least, generally, what do you find?
We find a fire scene that is completely befuddling to the fire experts who respond to them. That covers the whole gamut of spontaneous human combustion. Mainstream fire science is simply not prepared to cope with these kinds of rare but well-documented phenomena. And that's why the officials in Oklahoma had such a quandary with this case. You know, they were called to a fire scene where they were told there was smoke inside. They expected, once they realized there was a human being in there, to find a body that they could pick up, take to the morgue. That's not what they found. They found this apparently ashen body with just the head, the hands, and the feet surrounding the hole through which the rest of the torso had burned through the flooring. And yet 3 feet away from that hole, we were told today, that plastic knobs and cabinets had not melted. The stove and the refrigerator, very close to that hole through which Mr. Van Zandt burned, were intact and undamaged by heat and flame. Their quandary was they expected to see a tremendous amount of evidence for very high heat, given the nature of the destruction to the body that they found, the remnants of the victim. And yet they did not find any evidence. In fact, they kept using the phrase low heat fire to us today as we spoke to the officials. So we have this amazing quandary. How do we explain what should have been perhaps temperatures around 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit, because that's what you get in a very high thermal operating retort in a crematorium, to ash and bone, to ash and a body to bone fragments, not just to pure powder. But in these fire scenes, like we're hearing from Oklahoma and many other of the cases that we have investigated around the world for now almost 4 decades, we don't find that evidence of high heat. We don't find heat damage to the ceiling directly above the point of combustion that consumed the victim.
What's the temperature have to be, Larry, for a body to combust?
Well, in a crematorium, a retort owner will run the oven at about 2,200 degrees, 2,400 degrees for an hour and a half to 2.5 hours, depending. Then the temperature is lowered to 1,500 to 1,800 degrees for another hour and a half to 2.5 hours. We're talking a lot of thermal energy, a lot of fuel, gas, or oil to generate that heat for that period of time in conditions that are supposedly optimized by fire science to incinerate a body in the quickest amount of time with the least amount of fuel.
So if you have a fever, you're about 100, 102, that's pretty high. You're saying that to combust, it's got to be way over that.
According to crematory operators, and this past summer we had the privilege of meeting not only a crematory owner-operator, but also a fire chief. He had a dual profession. So we thought this is a wonderful opportunity to both explore with him the kinds of fatal fires that he and his firefighting career has encountered, and then also to talk to him about what he's observed as his role as a crematory owner-operator. And the two were very different until we showed him photographs of Dr. Bentley, George Mott cases that we've discussed with your listeners in the past, and now quite probably this case of Danny Van Zandt from Oklahoma that occurred yesterday.
Yeah.
He was just absolutely bumfuddled. He said to us, I had never seen fire scenes that looked like the photographs you're showing to me. In the early years of research, we had a Dr. Adelson, the medical examiner for Cuyahoga County out in Ohio. He looked at the photographs that were placed in his hands, and he said, these photographs are hoaxes. And he was asked why. And his response was very firm, very terse, very succinct. because the human body doesn't burn like this. Therefore, these photographs that you're claiming is spontaneous human combustion can't occur. The photographs have to be hoaxes. Well, the photographs are real. The evidence real. What the officials saw Monday afternoon in Monroe, Oklahoma, was real. Whether it proves to be spontaneous human combustion, of course, we're going to attempt to ascertain that as our research into this case proceeds. But at this point, in terms of the conceptualization of what history has defined as spontaneous human combustion, this is a really strong-looking case.
Larry, could there be a supernatural cause for some of this? And by that I mean, as bizarre as it may sound, you know, from the pits of hell, Satan opens up and he wants the soul and he just burns the body or something. I mean, could it be that far-fetched?
Well, we're not going to go advocate on behalf of Satan in this connection. However, if you look at mythology and cultures that deal more in esoteria and metaphysics than does most of Western culture, they would talk about levels of reality, levels of existence or life forms or energy patterns that have some degree of consciousness that appears to be able to engender fire. These are called the Agni spirits, among other terms that have been given to this kind of fire-inducing energy pattern.
Amazing story.
And we have suggested that in some of these cases that, at least in our reality construct, that's a plausible avenue to pursue. That is certainly nothing that one can take into a scientific laboratory at this point, and it's not something that you advocate in front of a group of firefighters.
No.
But with your audience, you know, we're not prepared at this point to rule out much of anything.
We're open to everything.
Some substance, right.
Let's take some calls here with you, Larry. We'll go to Faith in Hoopah, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Faith, welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, I read a book a number of years ago that was titled Spontaneous Human Combustion, and they put forth the only theory that I've ever heard that really sounds even remotely plausible. And he had this section in the book where he was talking about the bodies that they had observed to behave this way had been actually hit by ball lightning. And then he went into quite a discussion about the behavior of ball lightning, how it's been observed to actually move right through window glass into people's rooms and, you know, move around in strange ways. And there's nobody really understands ball lightning as far as I know, but it is a real phenomenon that's even been observed, strangely enough, moving into the fuselage of a commercial airliner in flight. So it can do some pretty strange things. And there's so much energy in the lightning, in the ball lightning itself, that that's the only thing that I've ever heard or come across that seemed to have any, possibility of putting that kind of energy to create that kind of heat in a localized place. I wondered if you'd ever read that book or heard of anything like that.
We certainly know the theory. It's one of the theories that we've advanced in a blaze to explain some cases of spontaneous human combustion. A one-inch ball, a one-inch diameter energy ball lightning can generate, it's estimated, about 480 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's said that if the ball were 50% larger than that, the amount of explosive force would be equivalent to TNT.
Wouldn't it burn going through a wall or something like that, Larry?
Ball lightning has been known to burn through objects. It's also been known to pass through objects without causing any injury. We do have connections of SHC linked to ball lightning or something that would be described by a viewer as ball lightning, at least some kind of a plasma energy. Bill Cunningham in Philadelphia in 1955 was burned by being struck by ball lightning. If he had not seen this ball of energy coming through a window and hitting his shoulder, you know, he would just suddenly found himself burned on the flesh and not knowing why. There was a Smithwick housewife in 1975 who was hanging up laundry outdoors. One of these plasma balls of energy struck her, burned her skirt, melted the heating band around her finger.
Great stories. The fact that these things are happening time and time again, Larry, it's got to be baffling for so many people.
It's baffling for a lot of people, and since Faith was kind enough to bring up ball lightning, what we find interesting about using that as an explanation for spontaneous human combustion is not too many decades ago, mainstream science dismissed ball lightning as mythology and hearsay and superstition.
That's right.
And now it's been created, as you well know, George, in laboratory conditions. So now science acknowledges ball lightning. The same thing happens currently with spontaneous human combustion among mainstream science. No, it doesn't happen. It's superstition. It's mythology. Can occur. And then we have case after case, as you say, 400. In our field, in our research, we've now got up to about 500 cases of this. And with your main guest of tonight's program talking in a few minutes about near-death experiences, we're just, as a preface to his talk, tell you that near-death experience relates also to spontaneous human combustion, because we found that not all cases that fit the definition of SHC are fatal. People do survive this.
Shrouded Turin may very well be part of that, you know?
Yes.
Let's go to Samuel in Wichita, Kansas. Samuel, you're on with Larry Arnold. Go ahead.
Hi, Larry. Hi, George.
Hi.
I fail to see where you're talking about spontaneous human combustion. You're talking, what I hear you saying is something external. And I think that this is something internal. I was in the United States Navy, and I served on board an aircraft carrier where we had two people that were burned and beyond recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no burning of material on the outside. Isn't this happening from the interior instead of from the exterior going into the interior? And are the organs and spinal column disintegrated before other parts of the body are burned?
Good question. And you haven't ruled that out, Larry.
Oh, we certainly have. And if Samuel thought that we were implying that all causes of SHC are external, he misunderstood or misheard us. We certainly do not posit that. We are willing to consider forces external to the body, absolutely. But as we said when you asked us earlier about possible causes, and we mentioned biochemistry, bioelectricity, certainly
right.
Those would be energies inside the body. One of the naysayers, Dr. Mark Benecki, rails against spontaneous human combustion by saying, in no case, that's his phrase, in no case are there ever internal organs burned more completely than our external body parts. Well, that is simply not so. So based on his argument against SHC on its face, he has to admit, if he accepts the evidence, that SHC is a real phenomenon that cries out, as Samuel says, for an explanation. And until we get further cooperation, additional cooperation from the first responders at these amazing scenes like the one that we're talking about occurred yesterday in Oklahoma, the confusion, the mystery, the uncertainty, and the denial of this amazing ability of something to self-cremate an individual is going to be unsolved, unexplained, and people will continue to burn up this way now and then.
Larry, has anybody combusted just walking around outside in front of a crowd?
Yes.
Oh, really?
we have a gentleman from England, if memory serves, 1985 was the date. The first name was Paul, walking down a London sidewalk. This happened to him. He ran around the corner and into a medical facility seeking treatment. We have a number of eyewitnesses who have seen their kin, their relatives, or bystanders go up in a ball of either bright blue light, which is the color that is normally reported in cases of spontaneous human combustion by eyewitnesses, or have seen their next of kin, their spouse, go up in smoke, to the amazement of both husband and wife.
I think I'd be in shock if I saw that happen to a human being. Wouldn't you?
Most people are certainly stunned by witnessing this happening, both in the case of having occurred to themselves or having witnessed it occurring in others. Peter Jones, with whom we've spoken to you about, was a survivor of SpontCom twice in one day back in October of 1980. And Peter, aside from being perplexed, was not particularly horrified. He was just mystified.
Yeah. Shocked.
He was one of those rare individuals who has the sense to be just awestruck and curious about what's happened to him without fleeing in terror.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Tammy's with us now, Oklahoma City, probably close to where Mr. Van Zandt blew up. Go ahead, Tammy.
Well, yes, George and Larry, I have something that I would like Larry maybe to see if he can, you know, do some research into. October 1st, my sister was on the second floor balcony of her apartment in Oklahoma City, and people said that she was just all of a sudden on fire.
Wow.
Now, she didn't die immediately. She lived for 10 hours later on morphine, but they were unsurvivable injuries.
When you saw her, Tammy, in the hospital, wherever, you didn't see her?
Yeah, I did in the hospital.
Was she all burned?
But all we could see was from her chin up. Her face had burns, but the thing is that my oldest sister has been having really bad hot flashes for menopause, and now this sister that died had told my mom just right before this. She talked to her on the phone, and she said, "Mom, I feel like I'm burning up.
Oh, my God.
I literally feel like I'm on fire." And the people, anyway, she had been put on Ambien because she had really bad anxiety. So about 4 months before this happened, her doctor put her on Ambien, but she didn't even know she was on fire. She sat on the plastic lawn chair on her balcony, and the people were saying, "Vicky, Vicky, you're on fire." And she woke up, and they said, "Run to the front door." So she walked to the front door. Every step on the carpet in her apartment was burned. The couch where they knocked her over sideways was burned. Sprayed her out with the...
That's an incredible
fire
story.
Extinguisher? The fire extinguisher. No, and then they came, and they couldn't tell. They said... witnesses, we couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman, but the medical examiner said there was no accelerant on her.
Did she smoke, Tammy?
She did
smoke.
Yes, but my mom and my sister and my neighbor and everybody has been, even before this thing happened this past weekend in Oklahoma, we've been thinking, could she have just burst into flames?
Larry, this is interesting, the fact that she would call her mother and say she felt like she was burning up inside.
Right. We've heard that from a few other reports. And, of course, women who suffer extreme menopausal heat flashes think that they're burning up. And we can attest to that as a personal history. Tammy, we'd like very much to get in contact with you and discuss this incident further.
Do you have an email address, Larry?
We do. Tammy, you ready?
No, let me try to.
And I'm going to write it down, too.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Larry. Something here.
This is for Tammy, and this will be for anyone else who's listening who wants to get in touch with us with questions or possible leads about other experiences such
okay.
as Tammy described.
Go ahead, Larry.
Easiest way to get us an email is parascience, P-A-R-A, science, at gmail.com.
All right, parascience, @gmail.com. You got that, Tammy?
Uh-huh.
Make sure you include your contact information for Larry because he'll research this. This is an incredible story. Incredible indeed. Larry, you take care of yourself. Stay in touch with us. And if you get anything more in this Oklahoma case, would you call us back?
We'd be honored to do that, George. It is always a delight and an honor to speak with you and your audience about this subject and all the other mysterious things that you guys cover. You guys do a wonderful show, fantastic production, and thank you for having us back to discuss this most recent intriguing case of probable spontaneous human combustion.
It is an amazing story. It used to baffle me when I was younger, and the older I got and the more cases I studied, primarily from you, Larry, tells me, of course, there's something to this. It's an amazing story. We are reacting to a 66-year-old man in Oklahoma who, according to the sheriff, may have died of spontaneous human combustion. Up next on Coast to Coast AM, we're going to be talking with a chaplain about revealing heaven, the Christian case for near-death experiences.